Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Aramar Tefio on blogtalkradio.com. The views expressed here are not necessarily those of all hosts, guests, or producers, and the show is for a mature audience.
Welcome to Gather Round. I'm Ruth Anna Marte-Theo, and we have a full lineup tonight. We've got our bits and bobs, from simplicity to meditation, flash updates, all of that. Then we have an interview with Jonathan Frederick Marcus, who regular listeners have heard before on this show and on Feed Your Head. His son, Rashid, is going to be with us also, and a couple fighters out of Milwaukee, and I will murder Ariel's last name, Saika Dayana, and Hanif Said. So this will be fun. Then we will finish up with Sarit Jacobson talking about Palestine and Israel, what's going on in the Middle East. So we'll get right to it with our greenies for the night. This was exciting. Monday, the International Court of Justice ruled that it doesn't serve the purpose of research, scientific or otherwise, to be whaling in the Antarctic. So the Japanese whale ships have headed home. Now, this is something that people have been fighting for decades, and the Japanese were in under some kind of one of those loopholes. They claimed they were doing research when all they were doing was murdering our big mammals in the oceans. So that has come to an end, at least in international waters. Now, they are still able to continue this murder in their own coastal waters. But at least this is something. And so for those people who have just worked and worked and worked, I say thank you. This is something really big for the whole planet, actually. A couple other news items. In Indian-occupied Kashmir, which 81 miles north of Srinagar, which is the major city there, there was a fierce fight today. At least five people are dead. The fighting was between the occupying soldiers and the different resistance organizations, although they don't know who was doing this particular thing. They haven't made the comment, but one occupying soldier from India was killed and two policemen. So I'm sure we will hear more about that. At least if you watch international news, you probably won't hear anything about it if you're in the United States listening to what they allow you to hear. And, I want to say hi to George. George is going to be being interviewed on here, actually, well, on Feed Your Head on Friday night soon. So also, a couple other things. News-wise, this morning in Islamabad in Pakistan, a bomb exploded, killing 15 and wounding at least 35 at a fruit and vegetable market. And, you know, it's like, oh, my goodness. You know, grocers and customers, nobody is really safe now, no matter where you are, no matter how much money you have, whatever. You're apt to meet with something you don't want to. So then in Kashmir, too, I should have said that along with the occupation. The occupiers, which is the Indian Army, has imposed more restrictions and curfews on the people. So this is actually very commonplace in Kashmir. Things shut down, and it's very hard to live in an occupied country. This is the most heavily occupied country in the world. Over 700,000 soldiers are in Kashmir, and they have been for over six decades. This has been occupied, and they have been taking the brunt of the military and, what can they say, thousands of people just disappeared or were disappeared from there. A few years ago, we had a big thing in the summertime when the army killed over 100 of the young men. So, you know, there's things that the media doesn't tell us. The mainstream media, we really need to know that. And here's something else that I'm sure some people around the world are very aware of, but not so many people here. The JNI organization in Nigeria is the major Islamic group. They say that the military is executing Muslims across the country on the pretext of counterterrorism. Now, they're trying to make it look as if it's all about fighting between the Christian farmers and the Muslim herders. But the ethnicity, I can't even say it, and the religious extremisms are really, really heavily involved. So, you know, there, like many other places, the powers that be are trying very hard to divide us. So it falls to us, wherever we may be, not to fall into that trap that they are trying to set for us. And now I'd like to just talk a little bit about back to simplicity, simplifying our lives. And, you know, I've talked about getting rid of material possessions, clothes being a biggie, and for me, books, not so much furniture. I don't really keep a lot of furniture around, so that wouldn't be it. But somebody asked me about food, and I want to talk a little bit about that because I think that most of us are guilty of having, or not guilty, but we have food around that we don't use. Now, America is very high on the list. Like, we throw away more food than some countries consume. So this goes to just buying with a more discerning eye. Like, will you really use it? And hopefully you're buying fresh vegetables and fruits. So you really have to think ahead. How long will it last? Can you do something? Can you freeze it? Can you dry it? Something like that. No matter how good a deal is, if you end up throwing it out, it was no deal. And even if you compost, as I do, and I still have things that I put in the compost because I just don't use them up. They go bad. Sometimes there's a wonderful sale, and I think, wow, I can really do this. And I end up not using everything. So we have to make a concentrated effort along those lines. And I would say that if you look in your cupboards, one big thing is herbs. Now, most places will tell you, most people, to throw them out after 6 months to a year. And it's not that the herbs go bad, herbs and spices. They really don't go bad. Most of them, I don't know any that really go bad. But they may lose all of their qualities. They may lose their flavor. They may lose their smell. So some things it's better to buy oftener and just buy in smaller amounts. If you're not going to use that, now some things, like turmeric, which is like a biggie for me. I use it a lot. Every day I use it. And so, I mean, I will get a decent-sized bag of that. And, in fact, because I can't get it in the quantity that I like, I can't get it where I live. So when I go to the city, I have to get a large, when I get to an Indian Pakistani store, I get a large amount. But so, yeah, I may have it over 6 months, but I use it. I use it every day in my food. If you do that, remember to use black pepper with the turmeric because it will help your body utilize it much better. And besides cooking with it, I do use it for brushing my teeth. I use coconut oil and turmeric. And it's funny because it will stain your toothbrush, but it won't stain your teeth. In fact, it's one of the things that helps whiten your teeth. So it's just pretty much like a miracle spice. So, yeah, sorry, I got sidetracked there. But I have had different spices and herbs, especially herbs, that, I mean, I could just see they were really beyond. They just had nothing. They had turned from a nice shade of green to a greenish brown. If I kept them around longer, they'd go more brown. So all of these things, like, go through your cupboards, your pantry. We have things we're just not using. And if you have something that you bought in a moment of whatever, and now you know you're not going to use it, but you don't want to throw it out because it costs, you know, a little bit of money, you know, $7, $8, $15, whatever, dollars, you know, give it to somebody. Ask your friends, relatives, who wants this? Don't throw it out, but don't keep it around because you've already spent the money. You're not going to get the money back if you keep this on your shelf any longer. And if you really have no takers for it, compost it. Put it in your compost. I have a lot of things in my compost because I eat a lot of fruits and vegetables. And, you know, you cut the trimmings and all of this. And also, you can put newspaper in. You can put cardboard in, leaves, twigs, all of these things. Just go in your compost. You don't have to make a big deal out of it. You don't have to run out and buy something. You don't have to build all these elaborate contraptions out in your backyard. You can just put it on the dirt, in the dirt. Dig it in. Just keep piling. And, you know, then when it gets to a certain point, well, you may start composting another area and let this other one totally get ready and then throw it in your garden. If you don't garden, put it around your bushes, put it around your trees, or just leave it where it is. But never put it in your trash. If you live in the cities, you may have to make some other arrangements. You can also use compost in your house. You can have a culture with worms that are particularly, especially for this. So check it out, because there's no reason to be throwing these things. I'm telling you, throw this out of your cupboards and your closets, but I don't mean really throw it out. Compost it. As far as if you're still eating things out of cans will last quite a while. So it's just like a lot of other things. The quality may start to diminish over time, but as far as getting sick, that's very unlikely. So the next time, though, that you go to the market, just think ahead. That's all about being, you know, part of the simple living movement. Think ahead. Think, are you buying for a week? Are you buying for 2 weeks? If you are, you know, get the bananas that aren't ripe because, you know, they aren't very nutritious anyway. And as the time goes on, I mean, you know, then get your pineapple that's ready to eat. And then the bananas will start to turn brown, and that's when you want them, because that's when the nutrition really will kick in for you. So, you know, think things through. It's really easy once you get to doing it, but it takes a little thinking ahead and planning ahead. So, speaking of that, I wanted to get into the binaural beats, which some of you know, like 528 is a very good one for cleansing your DNA. And then I just saw something for thyroid, which it was for something, which I sent to a friend who's having thyroid problems. Go on YouTube, look up BINAURAL beats. There's so much. Now, you need a headset to listen to these because of the tones. The first time I did one, I thought, oh, I don't know if I can stand this. This was like a 45-minute thing. Now it's like every time I start listening to this, I just love it. It is like music, and I've been known to go to sleep to it. There's so many of these, but we need to do what our body is asking for. The first thing is asking that we actually become aware of it and what it needs, and it will tell us if we listen. So these, I think, are very important. And they go along with the chakra cleansing and different things. It all works together. So speaking of chakras, I just wanted to mention another site for meditation is www.how-to.meditate.org. And this is a Buddhist site, but for sure, you don't have to be Buddhist like we all know. I mean, you know, to meditate, you don't even have to say that you have a religion or anything. I mean, that's not what it's about. But if you go to that site, howtomeditate.org, there is a wonderful loving-kindness meditation there, which is very traditional, but I highly suggest it for all of us. You know, we need that time, and sometimes we need, besides just our breathing meditations or looking at the candle flame or something, sometimes a guided meditation in some form really fits what is called for. So give it a try, and I will put this on the Aramarte Feo Facebook page also. So now we're going to play a song called Rashid's Story, and when we come back, we will actually have Rashid and his father and a couple of my...
bagi Allah yang telah memberikan kesempatan kedua untuk terus bertahan setelah semua luka harapan yang hampir musnah keajaiban datang. Setelah apa yang terjadi
This, Bilal, would you name the group? Because I can't pronounce their name in Indonesia.
Yes, it's Ziad Nasheed.
Okay, and they wrote this in, this is in their native tongue, and they also did one in English, which I didn't play. But just thought it'd be nice to start out with the story. And you have Rashid with you right now, right?
Yes, he's right next to me.
Right. So, Rashid, do you want to just give a very brief story of what got this miracle comeback all started?
I know.
If that's not good, Bilal, you can go ahead.
Yeah. Okay, what it is him and his brother, yeah, back in 2009, were riding their bicycle in a place they weren't supposed to. It was late at night. And his brother rode his bicycle through a changing red light. Rashid waited behind and then rode it at a standing red light and was run over by two SUVs and was brought to Children's Hospital with life-threatening injuries, where he lost one kidney, half his liver, broke his pelvis, crushed one lung, and lost 46 pints of blood in surgery. And miraculously, he has survived and is 110% today.
That's what I wanted to ask about the kidney. Now, because he lost one, but because he was quite young and healthy, did he not have a kidney transplant or?
No, he just has one.
He just has one. Okay. Okay. So, but because that was, he was quite healthy with the one. I mean, he was healthy with the one that he lost, too. But I guess that couldn't be avoided. Yeah. So you had decided, I mean, afterwards, because I think you were so grateful and everything that he had made it, you started this miracle comeback, and you started a website telling the story. And from there, you have branched out, met people in other countries. People have written the songs. They've been singing. You've written a book. How is that coming?
It's coming well. Actually, since I talked to you, I think I might have told you, I opened up a PayPal account. Hopefully,
I was
going to
ask you about the PayPal account, but what about
it's going to be ready in a couple days.
Ready?
I have to learn
the book is
I have
ready?
To link it, almost. I have to find the link where people could for to be linked to my Facebook. I haven't figured that out yet, so hopefully in about a day or two, that's going to be ready.
Well, no. I'm going to ask you about the PayPal, but I'm asking you now about the book.
Oh, the book needs a little bit of editing and a little bit of money to basically publish it. I'm not sure who the company. I went with one company, and pretty much just on my computer waiting for the right moment.
Self-publishing is really the way to go now. And it just seems, you know, you have much more control over it. But yeah, I know you've written the book, and I was just curious how that's going. Okay, let me ask you. Now, you and Rashid have been speaking at different places, am I right, with different organizations?
We did some in some of the high schools a couple years ago. We did a few things. It's been a little while since we actually spoke in front of like a classroom or anything like that, but that's my plan. Once we get this whole thing, you know, ready with PayPal, you know, where I feel like I got something done. I don't want to start something else and not, you know, finish what I started.
All right. Well, I wanted to talk a little bit about this because now we've had blood drives in another country, actually a couple, and they've gone very well. But now you branched out a bit, and we have Ariel. Ariel, how do you pronounce your last name?
Shuhadayana.
Shuhadayana. Okay, that's pretty.
Yep.
Okay, I totally messed it up, but that's very pretty. Now you are fighting out of Duke Rufus, right, in Milwaukee?
Yeah.
And how did... Go ahead.
The academy's name is officially it's Rufus Port. The head coach that I train under is Duke Rufus.
Okay. Duke Rufus is your head coach. Okay. And how, I mean, did you go from boxing, which, I mean, you're still doing, but how did you meet Bilal and start wearing their colors and all? How did this happen?
How did I, excuse me, can you repeat
how did you
that?
Meet him? How did you, yes, because you're wearing, like, the MCB gear and things, so...
Well, I met Bilal through a friend of mine who was also supposed to be in this interview. His name is Hanif. So through him, I got in contact with Bilal, and I heard his story on how Rashid survived and how he's doing this amazing project, activity to give back to society and do great things with it. And so I also told Bilal about how I'm an amateur kickboxing fighter, and I'm trying to always improve myself, and I'm trying to be in compete as much as possible. And he asked me one day if I have any upcoming fights. I told him that I had a competition that just happened 2 weeks ago, and so
okay,
he asked me if I could wear the MCB logo in my fight shorts, and I said, of course, I would say yes.
Of course, okay. So that was it. So you actually met him through Hanif, who isn't with us tonight, but was going to be. So let me ask you also, because Bilal is very out as far as being a Muslim. Are you also?
I'm also a Muslim.
You are? Yeah. Okay. I didn't know. Years ago, I used to be really into boxing. And, I mean, people didn't even want to set by me because I'd be pounding on them. You know, I really got into it. But I haven't been following it for quite a while, and I really didn't know if the religion. I mean, I remember, you know, reading about Muhammad Ali, and you know he became a Muslim and he still boxed. You know, but so I didn't know recently if there's a lot of Muslim boxers. So I just was curious as to that. So. Is there any plans? I mean, are you going to keep wearing the MCB logo and all of this?
Yeah, I'm planning to keep wearing the logo when I fight. It depends on if I only have the logo in one of my fight shorts, so it depends if I wear another fight shorts and everything.
Sure.
But,
okay. Right.
But
it might be good. Go ahead.
Oh, at least in the near future, I will be wearing the fight shorts that I wear last time.
Okay. Well, do you have any plans for showing up, like at some of the blood drives that Bilal is planning ahead of time? Because I think that would be pretty cool. Have you guys talked about that, either of you?
No, we haven't really talked about that yet, but. It depends on like how far planned it is, and if I'm here in the United States or I'm back home in Indonesia, because I'm currently an international student here studying in the United States.
Ah, okay. So do you have to go back every once in a while to keep your status, or?
I went back home these past two summers, last year's summers and the year before that.
Okay.
This summer I will be staying here in the United States. I will be getting an internship in Chicago this summer. And
okay.
As an international student, you don't have to go back to your country every year. It's just that,
okay.
Yeah, I do miss home sometimes. And
sure.
My family.
Yeah, I mean, I really admire people who come on over and, you know, stay for quite a while away from their families. But that will be great to get an internship in Chicago. Hey, we say
yeah.
It's the greatest city in the world. I'm very biased towards Chicago. I love Chicago. So I hope that works for you, really. While he's here, why don't you, if you do a blood drive, try to get him, you know, to show up, a personal appearance kind of thing. Hello?
Yes. Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you were talking to him. I didn't hear my name come up first. I'm sorry.
No, I
you
was
were
saying
asking
that,
about him, Ariel?
I was saying that when you do the next blood drive, try to get Ariel, because he'll be here for the summer, try to get him to come and put in a personal appearance.
Almost definitely. As long as, you know, school or anything like that isn't interfering with him. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
The reason... we haven't really talked about it because, you know, my work schedule, and he's extremely busy. If he's not at school, it seems like he's either at the gym, so I try to catch him at night. But, yeah, most definitely, now that you brought it up, I'll definitely keep him in mind. And
that would probably, I assume, be like on a Saturday or something. Isn't that the day? Or I guess it depends on where you're going to do it, what kind of a day. If you're going to do it at a workplace, you want it during the week.
Actually,
but if you're doing it...
I'm considering doing it to make it easy. I might just start doing it at the blood center itself because this way they don't have to move anything out and it's always available to schedule there instead of search for a place.
Well, but let me ask you, is the blood center, is it like in a well-traveled area?
Yes, it's it's close to downtown and it's like between the middle of both north and south side, so it's
okay.
Well,
was it Ferris or Bemash? Who did it right out and they had a lot of drop-ins?
Oh, that was up in Uganda.
Right. So he just didn't know, but he had it out there and there were people just traveling by that stopped.
He looked forward. Yeah, he did a lot better than me, and that was his first one.
Yeah, he really, he surprised himself. I mean, Ferris wasn't expecting the turnout he got. So
he invited, I think, 4 and got like 86. I don't know how that worked out, but yeah, that's amazing.
Yeah. Well, he talked with us about how costly it is for people there when they're going to get the blood. It really costs. Uganda, like just about every country going, is having all kinds of governmental problems. And so the more that people can do in individual organizations, the better. He did an excellent job. So I'm looking forward. I hope that I can come, depending on when you do the your next one in Milwaukee. I would love to be able to be there. So... you know, when you get the date set, let me know.
I'm going to try to schedule it on Monday, and I'll let you know what day it's going to be. I'm going to try to schedule a couple of them, you know, in advance.
Yeah. So, right,
so,
because, I mean, the further in advance, you know, the better publicity you can get, we can give you, and all of that. But I know you wanted to talk about the PayPal account because you have, you're wanting to get some funds to be able to pay for, like, the website updates, studio time for the musicians, banners and gifts and shirts and things like that, because these drives, you're getting people around the world, and you want to be able to help them financially with the banners and things like this, the shirts. I have... lovely shirt signed by you and Rashida and your wife. And I think that people now can get the shirts by going to the website.
Well, actually, I'd like to tell you about that one. That part is That PayPal account is not active, so actually I won't be selling them like that right now. I prefer to give them out, you know, to the blood drive organization and give them out as gifts and things like that, because that was the plan at first, but I see a better opportunity by giving them out and as gifts and things like that, promoting the blood drive that way.
Okay, well, you know, if you don't want to do them online, it would be something, either the shirts or something else that you could sell at the blood drive.
You can't. Oh, the thing is that the blood drives are not allowed to sell anything, but I can also just give them.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah, they don't. Yeah, you're not allowed to. There's other ways around that though that I'm working on. You know where I can give them a card and it, you know, then they can, we could get their emails and start working things outside the blood drive would be better.
Oh, sure, yeah. I mean, that because a lot of people will buy, whether they're buying a mug or a shirt or something, people will do things like that.
Yeah.
So, right, if you have good material set up, okay. Well, that makes sense. And
yeah,
I know you're working on
that.
The paper. Pardon?
No, I want to get bumper stickers, too, that have my website on it and, you know, get bumper stickers made, too, soon. Maybe donate them at the blood drive.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you can give things there. So information would be good, too. And bumper stickers, sure. That'll make sense. But, right, so give something to people so that they can connect up and then they can buy some products.
Yes.
If you can't sell them right there. That makes sense. You are working on the PayPal account. When do you think it's going to be ready, up running?
I'm really hoping in the next couple of days. It should be set up, you know, where I got the link to my Facebook. I want to make it easy for people when they get on my Facebook that it's not confusing. That's my main concern, is that it's real simple for people to access it. I don't want no confusion or people won't, you know, go into it. They'll just skip it and it'll be useless.
Well, yeah. I mean, it we have enough useless things in the world, so it's like, no, you want it to be. Because besides, if something's useless, besides it just, you know, not getting you what you need, people get frustrated. And
yes,
so you may lose people, too. So,
yeah.
Yes. So what is, tell me, you have something going in Ghana, as I understand.
Yes, actually, they keep calling me every couple of days. These guys are really excited. There's like a group of like six people in Ghana that are organizing America Comeback Ghana. And they're making shirts, and I'm going to have a Facebook page soon, and I'll send that to you. It'll be America Comeback Ghana, and hopefully you can share it. And, yeah, that's one. And then I got a big one coming, you know, like in Nigeria. That got put on hold because of some political issues going on in the country.
Right.
But that's getting prepared. And then a big one is going to be America Comeback Cambodia. That sounds like that's going to be really good because of the connections the guys that live in there is. He's going out of his way. I mean, he's getting people, big people, to help. Even some people from Kuwait, some people with money. So he's expecting to get some funding there, too.
Oh, that would be wonderful.
And then Barbados, too. There's a good guy in Barbados who's organizing America Comeback Barbados. So, and then I'm talking to someone in India and Brazil. So, I mean, things are coming along. And then,
wow. And Indonesia also, right?
Indonesia, yeah, that's a little more difficult right now. I'm trying to find the right person because people are a little bit confused over there. A lot of the females want to do it, but they're not understanding it. And I'm trying to get the right person to do it because it's not, you know, it's more than a one-person job. And you want to make sure you got the strong group of people that are willing to go through with it. You know, not just one person can't do it by themselves.
Right. So, well, since your wife is from there, maybe she can help you.
Oh, yeah, she is. She is. But,
vet people and figure out who's what group you want to affiliate with.
Yeah, it's a youth group. We want it to be a youth group, whether male or female, but we want them to be dedicated to it, understand the story, and be able to speak English, well, at least some of them, you know, so I can get them on the radio with you or, you know, where they can translate the material to their wife could do a translation, but it's good to have someone who speaks English who can talk back and forth to me too.
Exactly. I mean, at least somebody who can, you know, go back and forth.
I know some people there that speak English, though. Like, people, the one that was on the radio with Stevie on the sheet. I mean, he's a good connection. He's helping me out to search that area, too.
Yeah, but wow, I mean, this is, I just wrote down Nigeria, Ghana, Cambodia, Indonesia, Brazil, India, Barbados. Impressive. And, of course, Uganda. I mean, we've got Ferris there who's keeping up great work. He's excited about it.
And India, if I'm getting in India, I've already written for a youth magazine in India, so I think I could probably get on the radio there or write another article and promote Miracle Comeback India. You know, so that's another big opportunity right there. And another good thing, too, aside from the blood drive, we're about to make a historical event in Africa, being the first Rite of Silence in Africa, in Uganda, as of next month.
Say that again, the first what in Uganda?
Rite of Silence. Rite of Silence was established in 2003. Where it's a ride that happens one day, the third Wednesday of every May worldwide, where people get together, wear their bicycle helmets, and ride between 5 and 10 miles in silence to remember those who died or were injured on a bicycle. So we're going to be doing Miracle Comeback Uganda Ride of Silence. It's going to be the first one established in the whole of Africa. Not one country has gotten it. It's around the world, but it hasn't reached Africa, and this is going to be the first time.
Okay, but yeah, I mean that's
so
that's
going to be
perfect
worldwide. It's going to be promoted worldwide. It's going to be really cool because there's a million bicyclers that are involved in Rite of Silence. They're all going to know about this one guy in Africa. It's going to be awesome.
You know, that's it's perfect because Rashid was on a bike. We're not talking motorcycle. We're talking a bicycle when this happened.
Yes,
so,
we were invited
in
2010 to the Rite of Silence because of Rashid.
This is excellent. Wow, you are just so busy. I mean, everything, and it seems like it's all coming together. I mean, I know there's frustrations, but a couple years ago you wouldn't have dreamed that all of this would have been happening. And obviously it didn't happen all on its own. We heard Ariel's story, but I wonder what did, and he won his fight too, may I say, 2 weeks ago. What made you just click on, hey, why don't I have these boxers wearing MCB?
Because MCB makes you win. No, I'm just kidding.
There you go, Ariel.
Thank you for that.
Ariel, I did get Ariel, no. See, Hanif, I don't know. I just I saw it as another opportunity to promote Miracle Comeback and to promote fighters who wear Miracle Comeback on their shorts. I see an opportunity where people will get to know them. Maybe Ariel, I'm not saying that MCB is that big, but maybe with Ariel's skills, he's a great fighter, maybe someone in Africa or something like that will really be into Miracle Comeback and say, hey, take Ariel and Hanif, bring to Africa. We want them to fight out here. Maybe they'll pay for it. Just as an opportunity, you know what I mean? We could promote each other for as long as it goes on. I mean, as long as they want to. I mean, it's a fun thing. And I'm all about, you know, promoting people and, you know, people that support us. You know, of course, I'm going to go out of my way and try to promote them as long as they're okay with it. I'm not going to do something they don't want me to do.
Well, of course not. No. But it's a whole win-win-win all the way kind of thing. So, sure, you support people, they support you. That would be great for Ariel to get, you know, a couple tickets to here and there to go fighting. That would be really nice. So do you have a manager, Ariel, or are you looking for one? I used to think I'd be a good manager back in the day when I was really into boxing. I probably would have, but I guess
as of now, I'm just focusing on getting more wins, more amateur fights, and right now, like, management is not the biggest priority for me. For me, the biggest priority is the growth that I have. Basically, I'm Duke Rufus himself and the management team from Rufus Sport, they're basically almost like family to me. They take care of me in a way.
Right.
So for now, management is not until I get to a certain level of pedigree.
Well, and your schooling is very important right now. That's probably the your first priority, is it? Or am
yes,
I wrong?
Yes, it is.
So everything has to be or needs to be worked around that, which makes a lot of sense. So what would you, Ariel, give in advice to young men? I guess women are boxing now, but I just can't quite see that, so I'm going to stick with advice for young men who, or even boys. How old were you when you started fighting?
I started doing martial arts when I was 16 years old, early in high school. And I started with Chinese kickboxing, which is like kickboxing, but you have takedowns too, so there's a small bit of judo or wrestling into that mix. When I started martial arts, I started with the wrong reasons, with reasons such as I just want to be strong. I just want to bloat my ego up. I just want to build a body. But martial arts isn't like that. And as the more you go, the more you learn the art, whichever martial arts you do, the more you become humbled by the experience. Basically, for young men who are aspiring to become martial artists or even fighters, just take it step by step. There will always be people who's gonna say you're not as good, you're not gonna be great. Don't listen to those kind of people. Believe in yourself. Just keep doing at it. If you do the same thing over and over and over again, you'll be good at it.
Okay, like you're saying basically, like don't listen to the naysayers and keep practicing. Just keep doing it.
Yeah, because for me myself, I used to have a chronic asthma, and people would say that I can't really do martial arts. So, but then I just kept doing it, and actually doing martial arts helped me. A sort of cure or restrain the asthma that I have.
Yeah, it's funny how our body, if we really use it and really work it, will, like you say, cure or lessen a lot of those issues that we have. So for you, I mean, it's been really a good thing. On different levels.
Really, it's a great thing. It's a great thing.
Yeah.
When I was younger, in my teens, I had a really weak body. I would get sick so easily. I had a lot of treatments when I was young, and that always worried my parents.
Sure.
But the more you use your body, the more active you become as a person, the more your body will get to a state of balance, basically.
Right. It can balance out, and it becomes much stronger. When muscles are used, I mean, well, that's what they're for. And otherwise, they just atrophy or something. So that's excellent. So you're going to keep boxing for quite a while then, I think, huh? That's the
Hopefully
plan?
So. That's
yeah.
the plan.
Okay, well, it's always good to have a plan. And speaking of plans, Ben, our friend Bilal there, he's got big plans too. And he's seen some of them just already come into fruition. So, Bilal, after the PayPal is set up in a couple of days, what's the very, very next thing after it's set up? What are you going to do?
I'm going to call you and tell you it's set up and I'm going to
okay.
I'm serious.
And then, after you call and tell me, then what?
I'm going to, well, I guess the best thing would do, I'll do is post it on my Facebook, leave message after message after message to people, you know, where it just drives them crazy, where people get tired of me, and then realize it's easy, it's right there, and it's going to help everybody, not just me. It's going to help everybody. I want them to and just get on my Facebook. I want all the people, everyone's ready in Uganda. All of Ferris' friends are ready to donate. Nigeria, Ghana, they're ready. You know, they're all going to do whatever they can because they know, you know, that this is, I mean, they want to give gifts to people because people, when they donate in Africa, imagine people, you know, they're poor, but they, you know, but they still want to donate. But, you know, people want, you know, a little bit of something, an incentive, you know, because here at the blood drive, they give away fruit and juices for free, but there, they really get nothing. So we want to be that that tool to make people want to come back, and you know, and that's basically it. We want to, you know, and it's not, you know, out of our own pocket. If we can do something out of our own pocket, which I'm going to donate, I expect everybody involved in the organization to donate. That's going to make others want to donate. We don't want to just expect, you know what I mean? We're going to be part of this. It's not
sure.
We're no different than them, but we should be donating ourselves. I mean, so it's all going to be spread out wherever something's needed. Boom, I'm going to send it, you know, Western Union or whatever over there, and I'm going to have papers, proof of what I'm using that money for. Everybody can have access to that. They want it.
Exactly.
And it's going to be and I want everybody to feel that they're comfortable with what I got. I mean, this is for everybody. It's not just for here. And it's probably going to be more for overseas than anything because more support is coming from overseas, as I said before. It's sad, but people seem to care more outside the U.S.
Yeah.
It's weird. It's opposite of what you expect.
But, yeah, I want to go over that again. I really want to reiterate that you are not using this for Bilal's family to get rich on. This is not what this is about at all. And it's good that you're going to have the records for people to see where the money's going. And
yes.
That will be good. And that's where the pictures come in handy and everything. So,
yeah.
So people won't have to think, oh, I don't know, is this another scam? It's like, no, this is definitely not a scam. This is the real thing. And if like me, I was just going to say, if like me, well, and Rashid for sure, you've ever been the recipient of blood to save your life, you know how important this really is.
Yes.
So, and whether you're giving the money or giving the blood, you know, it's not, they take a pint of blood and give you some orange juice. I mean, you're okay. It's not going to leave you so you can't move for the next 2 weeks or something. It's not like a bone marrow transplant, which is like really serious stuff. But, you know, when you donate your blood, you're giving a part of you to another person, and we know we're all connected, but that makes you even more connected. Like, I feel that because I've got so many people's blood in me that it's like all I can do is just be grateful, and you know, and you never know who they are. It's the way it works. But I love how just starting with an idea and a heart full of gratitude, I guess gratitude comes first and then the idea, you have managed to do this and get so many things, so many different aspects. I mean, my God, now you're sponsoring boxers. Come on, man. Ariel, this is great. You know? It's
I know.
Just,
it's an amazing movement.
Yeah. And then you know, writing the book and then getting people in all these countries involved. I love it. So I want to thank you guys all. Well, and I'm sorry that Hanif didn't get here, but I'm sure there was something going on. But Ariel explained a little bit more about the fighting to us, and Bilal is updating. So we're going to keep updating. And, yes, definitely let me know when the PayPal is up and running. And I think we're going to close this out with Dimash in Nigeria with Breathe Again. How's that, guys?
All right.
Okay.
All right.
So thank you very much. Good
thank
night.
Thank you very much for having me.
Okay.
Thank you, Ariel.
Pleasure. Okay, there we go. Good night.
I am Rashid, and I am so thankful to Allah, the Almighty, for giving me a second chance. Second chance. Second chance.
Never thought that I would breathe again. Like the angels don't take me away, but the miracle brought me the day that I can see the sun again, see my mama smile again. Never thought that I would breathe again. Like the angels don't take me away, but the miracle brought me the day that I can see the sun again, see my mama smile again.
I think about life, my eyes on the ceiling. I think about time, my heart goes chipping. The earth is not mine, someday I'm gonna leave it. This life is not mine, soon the owner will take it. You can have gold and have all the diamonds. Have no love, it's like you never had a dime on. Even in the dark, my eyes can't see light. Even if I cry, my heart still fight. Rain, 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 when it's gonna stop? It wash away your houses, take away your car. Storm getting closer, when it's gonna stop? It take away your freedom, we're hiding on the ground. No matter how things go, God is in my heart. I'm keeping my hope that I will never lose. I will think I'll be home, I will never die. For it's just been lost, Lord, but I'm still alive. Never thought that I would breathe again. Like the angels don't take me away, but the miracle brought me the day that I can see the sun again, see my mama smile again. Never thought that I would breathe again. Like the angels don't take me away, but the miracle brought me the day that I can see the sun again, see my mama smile again.
I see birds and I see butterflies, I see stars, it feels I'm kinda flying. 911 is the number on the dial. The sound and my view became so scary. Was it a real life or a Hollywood movie? I can see them angels looking like they want me. Firemen and the police, the doctors wanna save me. My heart beats slow like the end of my birthday. Would they ever see the next case? Daddy can't stand on his feet when the news breaks. Mommy's heartbeat sound like an earthquake. A heart of prayer. Oh God, the provider, your sunlight. Hear my prayers, spare my son life. And I pray to y'all, don't you let my son die. Please God, in the fingers move, that's the miracle comeback.
Never thought that I would breathe again. Like the angels don't take me away, but the miracle brought me the day that I can see the sun again, see my mama smile again.
Never thought that I would breathe again.
Like the angels don't take me away, but the miracle brought me the day that I can see the sun again, see my mama smile again.
Yeah, you know, in life there's always that moment that we find ourselves in a situation that we rather not be in. That scary moment, that painful moment, such moment you stick to your faith, keeping the hope high, knowing that everything's gonna be alright.
Never thought that I would breathe again. Like the angels don't take me away, but the miracle brought me the day that I can see the sun again, see my mama smile again.
Never thought that I would breathe again.
Don't take me away, but the miracle brought me the day that I can see the sun again, see my mama smile again.
Never thought that I would breathe again.
Like the angels don't take me away, but the miracle brought me the day that I can see the sun again, see my mama smile again.
Never thought I would breathe again. Never thought I would live again. Never thought I would see the sky again.
Never
thought I'd see the sun again,
see my mama smile again.
I love you.
Breathe again, Dimash.
Hi.
Sarita's here. Hi, Sarita.
Hi.
Hey. Wow. We have so much to talk about in such a little time. Palestine and Israel are really hot right now. So what has happened this week that really got you going? This is Sarita Jacobson talking. Well, I'm not, but she is. Yes. Okay. What's been the most impressive, good or bad, thing this week for you with Israel and Palestine?
Attacking elementary school.
Oh.
Definitely the most shocking of girls from the age of 6 to 12.
What was the reason given for that? Or was there a reason given?
A Zionist, and I forgot to ask. Sometimes I ask them what they think.
Basically harassment. I mean, isn't that, because we know those girls were not doing anything to warrant being attacked.
I agree with you.
Little girls, I mean, man, it takes a real big, brave man to do that, huh?
10 female students required medical attention after suffering excessive tear gas inhalation. It was at noon yesterday from April 7th, 2014. It's in a school called Salfit, a female elementary school.
My God, why on earth were they gassing children in a school? Just to see if the gas
According to
worked.
The headmistress of the school, the attack took place at approximately 9:30 a.m. At this time, the classrooms were full of female students between the ages of 6 to 12 years old. The soldiers shot tear gas from the street, and it landed in the playground, school corridors, and on the roof, with tear gas itself drifting into the classrooms.
Sure, because tear gas, I mean, that's just part of, I mean, that's what it does. It's not just where the pellet lands. I mean, it's a gas. It moves around. It drifts everywhere.
Two students lost consciousness on the spot, and the rest were just coughing.
Well, I mean, adults do, and so if it does that to adults, of course. I mean, we're talking 6 to 12-year-old children, small girls.
Children, tiny children.
Yeah.
I mean, at that age, they say even smoking a joint can harm your brain.
Yeah.
So imagine
what
tear gas can do. I mean, no one has ever died from marijuana, but people die from tear gas every day, especially in
Well, you know, the whole, our bodies, kids, they've got the soft spot in their head for years and years and years. You know, it's not just babies. And so, of course, their insides aren't all that, and they're small. So something that's going to knock out an adult,
yes,
it's going to really work on a child.
I was so mad reading it, but
I had not read that. That is absolutely horrible.
Source is International Solidarity Movement, and that's one of my most trusted sources.
Right, right. Definitely. Yes, yes.
The people that founded that movement are also Israeli and Palestinian.
Yeah. No, that is, like, if it comes from the ISM, it's, I bank on that also.
Me
I
too.
You know, I mean, we can't be totally cynical all the time. Well, we can, we pretty much are, but, you know, once in a while you've got to say, yeah. So if it comes from them, yeah, I'm going to believe it. Oh, my goodness.
But it's not the only thing that shook my world this week. I just...
What else?
I'm shocked by how the Israelis are treated, too, by the government in Israel. I'm starting to really hate how the government treats not just the Palestinians, but the Israelis, and I think it's worse than any Western government or American government. And this is what it bothers me. According to the new reports from Israel, 900,000 people in Israel have been going missing food for days.
My God, that's almost a million. I mean, Israel doesn't have that many to start with. So, oh, my goodness. Well, see, that's what
you've said
for a long time. You've talked about people, not just the Holocaust survivors, but some of them, but other people digging in the garbage there like they do here. So,
yeah.
You know, there is no reason on this earth for anyone not to be well-fed. No reason, except for the greed of the corporations and the governments. And the governments wanting to cause problems. So,
we didn't have this
know.
Problem when I was growing up there 20 years ago. We had socialism then.
Yeah, we long for those days. Because with true socialism, everybody's going to eat. I mean, there's just... That's, and have health care. There's just no getting around it. But these people now and this Zionist entity, it's a political party kind of thing. I mean, it's not a, I want to say, it's not a religion or anything. It's just a political entity. And they really don't care. I mean, anything they can do to keep control of the people, and if that means letting them starve, well, hey, that works too.
Yeah, they're
so,
very cruel. Their cruelty bewilders me. Just amazing.
Yeah, bewilders me more than the cruelty in other countries, because they talk about the Holocaust so much as far as, you know, what was done, and yet they do that. They're doing it to their own people and to the Palestinians. So,
yeah.
there's a couple funny, I mean, well, not funny if it happened to you, but interesting things, I think, that was sort of like, okay, you know, they're going to get theirs, maybe. Did you know that India, which is not exactly top of the line for human rights either, but they threw out 3 Israeli diplomats.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, because, you know, nobody ever does that to Israeli diplomats. But they had abused, I think, verbally and, they wounded him, so it was verbally and physically, an Indian immigration officer. And India actually had the guts, like, yay, India, to send them on their way. Now, they can't be charged because of diplomatic immunity, you know, which is often abused like this. I mean, I guess they thought they could just go ahead and nothing would happen. But India said, no, you know, you're not going to come here and do this to our people and expect to stay around. So they're shipping them back home. So, you know, it's little victories like that that make me smile, that make me say, okay, so some countries are making little moves anyway. So good for them.
Well, also, I forgot, there's so much happening in Palestine. I totally forgot.
Well, I wanted
bombing
to ask
each other.
What about, you know, I saw that article, and we briefly talked, but about there was a picture of Palestinian women in the West Bank in, like, fatigues, military clothes.
Exactly.
And it said that they were learning, I guess, how to protect themselves and things. What
yeah,
about
and Gaza has an army now.
Yeah. So
I'm actually worried for their safety. I do not.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
I do not think fighting will lead to anything. I think they need to go through the international court.
Well, I fear for their safety.
Do not know everything.
If the Zion, I mean, considering how the Zios are anyway toward Palestinians, if they
yes.
catch some of these women out and about training. because these women, they're not about to go out and attack them. That's not what this is about. This is just training for protection for them and their communities. But if they're caught out, I really, really, the thoughts going through my mind are horrifying of what the Zionists may do to them.
Violence is what Israel wants, by the way. They want the Palestinians to fight back. And they will even infiltrate into their society to start militias, I have no doubt. If they can infiltrate into India and in America, they can infiltrate in there. And they speak, have Israelis speak Arabic from home. So it's really easy. They're arresting so many people. I can't keep up. Dozens of people every month are being arrested, kids. But what horrified me today is to see them, they were bombing settlements outside Gaza. Someone was bombing.
I am
sure Gaza will be attacked tonight because of that.
Yeah, like let's see, if it's 8 o'clock here, it's like 4 in the morning. Yeah.
I did want to talk a bit about Gaza and about the settlements in East Jerusalem that they're without water. Gaza is only electricity a few hours a day, drones flying on their head every night, terrible, no hope. Their drinking water is so bad there that so many people are being, so many of my friends there have been sick, even
they're
to
sick.
Hospital.
Yeah, right. Well, because they say that something like 90%, 90-some percent of the drinking water is not actually potable. It's not... It will make you sick. There's nothing, and you have to drink it. You have to take showers or, you know, bathe in it and cook with it. I mean, whatever's been heated might, you know, be safer. They always say boil the water. But, and there's not that much of it. And they still have the sewage problem. The food is not getting in.
No food, not enough anything, really. Terrible
medical
poverty.
No. And yet, this just made me back to, you know, the human spirit. It is just absolutely amazing. I just read that a 55-year-old man in Gaza, it has taken him a little time to do this. He has built a plant, like a factory, maybe a small whatever, it turns plastic.
Fuel. I saw that.
Yeah, isn't that? I mean, with everything that's going on, with all the bullshit, everything that's happening there, this man.
What a smart human being! It's just unbelievable, amazing.
Yes, it gives me such hope that, you know, when people can still do this, in spite of, well, just like we know. These children that go to sleep hearing the drones all the time and study to the drones, I mean, their school marks, they do so well in school because, I mean, they I don't know how they concentrate, but they do, I mean, and just like him. So it's like, wow, you know, out of such adversity comes such, like, a great invention. It gives me a lot of hope. And sometimes we just
The Palestinians have more PhD per capita than Israelis or most countries, I think.
I think you're right. I don't know. I don't know why.
They see education as a weapon. I've been told by my brother in the West Bank that it's all they have left is education.
Okay. That's what I was just going to say. I mean, they can't really go anywhere or do anything.
That's right.
And so they study. And they're good. So, I mean,
very good.
Should be considered lucky if you have someone from Palestine who manages to get out and, like, come to your school or come out and work for a while in the country because they're above the average. Let's just face it. I mean,
The settlers attacked IDF really bad this time.
The settlers attacked the IDF?
Yes.
What happened?
Isn't that It's insane. I just don't know what to say.
But the settlers attacked the IDF?
Yeah.
Israeli Defense Force? Why did the settlers attack them? I just find this very funny. But
IDF is not right-wing enough for them.
Ah, my God, those people are fucked. Right?
They build illegal housing in some area in the West Bank, and
right.
IDF took it down, and now they're attacking IDF. It's like a circus. Israeli media is trying to not report it very much, but it's coming out.
Oh, okay, those squatters... called the settlers. They're just squatters. They're sitting on stolen land. They are really, really fanatical.
Very.
Wow.
Beyond
and after
belief.
All the IDF has
their
done
website, I was spying on them.
I mean, the IDF has supported them and, you know, all that. Wow. Well,
if you spy on them, they're really crazy. You can go to their website.
You'll see
the most crazy stuff they write about the Messiah, and they talk to God all the time. They're just so crazy. I don't know what to say to them.
They are just, wow. So they're turning on their own soldiers. Okay. They're
oh, yeah.
Crazy. Well, I wonder how that makes the IDF feel. You know, that sort of...
IDF property, like cars or their toilets or their buildings. They tore up their mattresses, burning their tires.
Wow.
They don't like IDF. They want to be by themselves and take it all.
Okay. So they would be more than happy to have the IDF keep supporting them, but anytime they do anything that... is almost humane, then they don't want them around anymore. Okay. Interesting.
Yeah.
You know what? It would be interesting to know where those squatters came from, because some of them over there are from here. I mean, they're from other countries sometimes.
Probably Brooklyn.
Yeah, they
come from it. It's so cheap to buy a place in the settlements if you're Israeli. The only place that you can afford to buy affordable living is they made it so you can afford to live in the settlements if you're poor.
Exactly. So,
the settlements, by the way, are half price or less, and you pay, no taxes if you're Israeli. If you're a Palestinian, by the way, you cannot buy a home in any of the settlements, even if you have all the money in the world. And they do not rent Arabs.
No, that's definitely
not Christian, not Bedouin, no, not Druze. It's a very racist.
It's a closed community. I mean, it's for them, and that's it. But I did read about a family from this country who went there because they could buy a cheap house, a cheap apartment in a settlement. And it's like they have no morals. They didn't seem to care that it's like, oh, well, that's too bad, that it was on stolen land and everything. But it's something that they could afford. And so, they toddled off. And that just makes me ill. It's like, how desperate are you? I mean, what the hell? Who wants a house? And didn't you say that you really... Well, just like here, you don't really own your house. I mean, if they want it, they'll take it. And isn't that in Israel, you don't really own it? Like, you buy a house, but wasn't it you that told me that you really don't own it exactly, that the state owns it? Maybe that wasn't you.
Yeah, it wasn't me.
Somebody told me that.
I guess if you get public housing... Which they're taking away in Israel, public housing from people, too, right now. So more people will be homeless.
God.
Since capitalism came to Israel, it didn't only make the Israelis worse. It hurt the Palestinians. Capitalism really hurts indigenous people
everywhere.
Everybody.
I mean, it really hurts everyone.
It's like a lot of people that we speak to do not seem to understand what capitalism actually really is.
No.
In many ways, try to explain it in different ways. I like to explain it in the saying that those who have the most money get to make the rules.
Exactly, and that's just perfect. That's the way it is.
It's so
strange. I know, because I didn't understand that. And years and years ago, I was said, yeah, I'm
me neither.
All that, and it's like, wow, once I found out what capitalism really is, it's like, no way. I think it's the bane of our existence. It's one of the major forces for the state the world is in.
Exactly.
It's really horrid. I saw also that, we know they've been having these tunnels, this tunnel system that's been digging underneath the mosque in Jerusalem. And I saw that there's another, I can't say the Al-Aqsa, how they say the mosque, but the foundation for it, they say they've discovered a new tunnel under there, and evidently, it's really new, and it will meet up with that other network. And they say that this could collapse almost at any time because there's so much tunneling underneath.
Wow.
So I don't know how they – I don't understand the tunnels. Like, if they're doing it so it falls in, or if they're doing it to try to get into a certain area, which they could just walk in like they do anyway, I don't understand. But it might just be that they're doing the tunneling – to make sure it does collapse. I don't know.
Yeah, I wouldn't be. I don't trust them.
No, not a bit. And then I saw that, not that it matters, because these peace talks have been such a joke between Israel and Palestine, but Bibi ordered the ministers then to end the direct talks with Palestinians. Well, that's just like for show or something. Who cares? Because they won't let Hamas be even represented. And, they whether the West likes them or not, they're the legal government. They were voted in. And, that kind of stuff. So they don't even have the right people there that they're talking to. But anyway, he said he didn't want any more direct talks.
Yeah, so, there's no profit in peace for them.
No.
So people in the Israeli government profit on war too much.
Yeah, there's so much profit.
And drones.
They use Gaza and the West Bank as research, as experimental stations for all their new weapons and everything. So, if they didn't have them, who are they going to use this stuff on? I guess Iran right now, because that's who they want to attack. I saw that idiot acting person who used to be a vice president of this country, Cheney, was saying something like encouraging the idea of Israel attacking Iran. No responsible person, politician or not, would ever do that.
There's no reason to even attack them.
Absolutely not.
Israel likes them enough to make weapon deals.
Yeah. Isn't that funny? Yeah.
Very insane. And even have the spy, Jonathan Pollard, worked for Israel and Iran.
Oh, but it's like, okay, well, if we get rid of him. And now, part of the, along with Bibi saying, no more direct talks, Israel isn't living up to their agreement to release the rest of the Palestinian prisoners that they promised to release. So, which is no surprise at all.
Oh, Israel is taking the Palestinians to international court.
Well,
Did you hear about that?
No, I didn't hear that particular thing, no.
I thought it was The Onion, and then I look, and it's the Middle East Monitor.
Oh.
But my... Well,
now, why would they do that? Because they don't... Israel doesn't go by anything that the international court... If it's against Israel, Israel doesn't go by anything the court...
committing
says.
War crimes.
Eh.
I'm sorry.
Oh, God. Okay, well, I'm glad I didn't have a cup of tea in my hand at the time because that would have been...
Charge is transferring funds to Hamas, which fires rockets at Israel, and the second is financing the terrorists and murderers themselves. That's what Israel says. Kettle is calling the pot very black.
I would... yeah, beyond black. Oh, my God. This is too absurd. It is too absurd.
It's absurd beyond anything we can say, isn't it?
It is. It is.
Especially after the Israelite phosphorus in Gaza killed over 1,000 people, steal their homes every day, break in their homes every night, violate every human right in the book that only exists, it gets violated. And now they're calling. It's just insane.
Oh. And it was perfectly okay for Israel to, in international waters yet, attack ships and kill people.
Impunity.
And all that. That was perfectly okay. I mean, they were 60 miles out to sea, and the United States backed them. That was perfectly fine. But a couple little homemade rockets land and don't hurt anybody, and all of a sudden, it's a big deal.
They don't even break a house, nothing.
No. That is... The absurdity is just, you know, the human comedy, Sarit. That's what we're living in.
We do, don't we? It's just a sad
comedy.
We
do. It is the human comedy. Oh, my God. No, it's too crazy. But, and next week we start something a little different. Sarit and I, besides bashing Israel, are going to be going a little more international in our bashing. And some good stuff, too. We're just going to bring in some other countries. So, that'll be fun. I look forward
to it.
Yeah. So, thank you so much, my friend. And you have a lovely weekend. And we will be back next Wednesday then. Yeah. And next Tuesday is the lunar eclipse. And remember, if you go out at night, you can see Mars in the eastern sky. It's that little bit of red. And
next
Tuesday, we should be able to see the moon, I think, is supposed to be red. Well, the eclipse. And then because Mars and the color and everything. So it's going to be a good time. So we'll see you then.
Okay, see you.
Thank you. Good night. Good night to George and our other guest in